Welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Charlotte, and in this podcast, we have honest conversations about sexuality. We offer expert advice and practical strategies so you can experience more sexual pleasure. We use explicit language and nothing is taboo. You can submit a question to be answered on future episodes at pleasuremechanics.com or by calling 302-IN-TOUCH and leaving a message. Today we have a slightly different format than Chris and I talking, which is often what we have. Today I, Charlotte, am going to be interviewing Jacqueline Hellier. She is one of Australia's foremost experts in relationships and sexuality and positive sex. She is a therapist, an educator, a workshop leader. She has a particular perspective that I really enjoy. I feel like she includes a really lovely combination of a practical down-to-earth approach and kind of has a naughty side to her as well. And as a therapist and an educator and someone who leads workshops, I think she has a really wonderful voice in the field. So I'm really excited to interview her. She has a fantastic blog and a new radio show called The Tantric Lounge, Sex, Science and Spirituality. She has two books out, The Sex Life Survival Guide for Parents, which is an ebook that you can get on her website, and Sex Secrets for Busy People. She also has a bunch of other bite-sized ebooks, as she calls them, all of which you can find at her website, jacquelinehellier.com. There are moments in this podcast where the sound quality is not as good as our podcasts normally are. We were recording from New York to Sydney and the sound wasn't perfect. But I think that what she is saying is so valuable and worth listening to. So hope you can bear with us for that and know that the sound quality on Speaking of Sex is often better. I think she's a great voice. I'm excited to be interviewing her and we'll get to it. So we're so thrilled to have you here.
Thank you.
Will you feel free to introduce yourself to our audience, and how do you describe what you do, what your work is in this field? Is there anything else you want to add to my mini intro?
Yes. Well, what do I do? I mean, I'd like to think that I'm in the third wave of sexuality educating and so forth. I call it the third wave because in the West we had shame for so long, like hundreds, thousands of years really, where sex was this bad thing. It was shameful, and particularly women weren't supposed to be sexual. You know, we've been bringing up girl children for countless generations to think that they weren't sexual, shouldn't be sexual, and if by some horrific chance they were sexual, we tended to stone them to death, burn them at the stake, lock them up in insane asylums. I don't know about over there, but in Australia we were still locking girls up for promiscuity in the 1960s. In insane asylums. Probably some of them are still there. Yes. Anyway, so we had that for a very long time. And then in the 1970s, thank goodness, the West went, yay, sex is good. We should all like sex. Sex is fabulous. Women should like sex too. But the problem was we had such a limited view of what sex was, right? Because we'd been suppressed for so long, we had no concept whatsoever of what female sexuality was. And therefore, we only had a very limited concept of what male sexuality was. Because you need to have the male and the female, you need to have everybody fully expressing themselves sexually to have, you know, really positive sexual outcome for the people involved. And so because the women had no idea and the men had no idea about the women, all the men really knew was kind of, well, let's face it, masturbating, right? Okay, so they'd get married and they would continue masturbating inside their wives. So that was the only model we really had in the West. It's kind of like, oh, I'm horny. Got to start off by being horny. I'm horny. I'm going to stimulate my genitals very quickly, rapidly, so mum doesn't catch me. And then when I have an orgasm, it's all over, right? So when for so long that got translated into sex, and that's what you did as a couple. Okay, so come the 1970s and everyone's supposed to be having sex and yeah, this is all fantastic, but women were therefore supposed to be having sex like that too, right? I call it the male adolescent masturbatory attitude approach to sex, right? And I'd have to say it would have to be the most boring approach to sex possible. You know, it's the most limited model, yet it's the model that's come to become the norm. Three phases to sex. You got to be horny, right? You got to like the jiggity jig, and you got to finish with an orgasm, right? And all these dysfunctions that we all supposedly have, particularly women, because women are so dysfunctional, aren't we? Because we don't have raging libidos like teenage boys. It's not, there's no problem with us. The problem's the model, right? So I like to think of what I do is like the third wave, okay? So it's beyond that shame model. And then it's beyond what I call the sleaze model, which we've had for the last few decades, which is really just building on that adolescent masturbatory approach, which is like, yeah, let's get really horny and yeah, let's fuck really hard and bigger, better orgasms kind of thing, which is okay and probably a step forward from the shame, right? But it's still underlying this is this idea that like sex is kind of like bad, it's kind of low, it's kind of base. Yeah. So originally in the shame phase, which is most of Western history, it was kind of like sex was shameful, it was bad and you shouldn't do it, right? Then for the last few decades, which is what I call the sleaze era, we had sex is bad, but it's okay to do it, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Well, I think we're moving beyond that. I think it's about time we actually said, you know what? Sex is good. Sex is normal. Sex is whatever it needs to be for you, right? And if you want to do that little limited model, that's okay. And in fact, it's quite a good model for a quickie, but there's so much more, right? And fortunately, other cultures outside the West, such as the Tantrics of India, the Taoists of China, Kadosha in North America, and so forth, a lot of other cultures, in fact, virtually every culture except the West, had a much broader and deeper understanding of sex and sexuality, right? So I've studied those as well, or what we know of that time. So I've studied all the Western science and therapeutic approaches, which I have to say are pretty bloody limited. And I've studied these other ones as well, and I've experienced everything, so I don't talk about anything that I haven't experienced. And I have to say that our sexual potential is awesome. It is so much beyond this idea that sex is kind of this naughty little thing that we have in this box over there and, you know. And it's certainly not, yeah, fuck me, big boy. I mean, it can be at times if that's what you want, but there's just so much more to it, yeah? So that's kind of where I'm at. I call it the third wave.
I love it. That's a beautiful summary of history and where you locate yourself.
Yes, the history of sexuality in the West in, what, 30 seconds.
I think it's so true. There's so much shame. And I think there's still this idea of, like, what is the value of sex? Like, why does sex matter? And, we at the Pleasure Mechanics think that sex is fuel. Pleasure is fuel. All these things assist us in creating a far better, more joyful life.
Absolutely. I agree with you. Yeah. And I love the term the pleasure mechanics because humans are made for pleasure.
Yeah.
Like our whole bodies, our whole system functions way better if we're enjoying ourselves, if we're happy, if we're having positive, pleasurable activities, right? But again, because it's so ingrained in Western society and culture that pleasure and sex is bad, right, that, you know, we're working and we're trying to operate within a worldview that we don't even realize still exists. Like so many people still think now that, oh, no, we're beyond all that, you know, like, oh, that was ancient history. You know, I'm not like that. You know, I can, you know, fuck like a porn star and, you know, I'll do anything and stuff. And then, you know, especially young women, and then they come to see me after some years of this and they've just gone back into the shame thing. I see so many women come to see me who think that, and men too, but particularly women, who think that they've become very liberated because, you know, they're embracing their sexuality and they'll do anything for free, yeah? And you know, they're all acting like high-class escorts for free, whether they're enjoying it or not. And then after some period of time doing this, they come to me and they're like, I just don't like sex. And then they drop back into the other view of sex, that women don't like sex, yeah? It's kind of, I call it the porn star versus prude model. Right, because in the past it was prudish was right. You know, women were supposed to be prudish, and now we've done this kind of complete flip to you've got to be like a porn star. Yeah, if you're not acting like a porn star, there's something wrong with you. I'm like, you know, ladies, it doesn't have to be either or.
So, what is the potential of a healthy sexuality, sort of in that in the middle ground? Like, why does having a healthy sexuality matter for us? I mean, I think it's so essential and important, but I think we're still sort of trying to convince people that it's valuable.
Yes.
That it's not just like hedonistic or dirty, but yes, there's this yes. wholesome, I sort of love the term like wholesome sexuality, just this place yes. that it is this sort of natural, gorgeous, glorious, organic process that we get to do with each other for fun. And
yes, absolutely.
And
it's free. And it's free. You know, like, it's just so easy. Here are our bodies. Let's just play with it, you know. And I just wish that we would give ourselves the freedom that we now give ourselves around food, you know, like food and gastronomy and all of this is, I assume it's the same overseas. I mean, in Australia, all of the bigger selling, you know, radio show, TV shows and stuff are about food, you know, like MasterChef and all this stuff and, you know, like cookbooks sell more than any other book, you know, around. You know, it's insane. But it's kind of great. Like, people are kind of going, hey, food's great. We can have all sorts of fun with food. We can look at pictures of food. We can play with food. We can have something simple. We can have something complex. We can have huge feasts. We can have a picnic. We can have food outside. We can have food inside. You know, we can have food anywhere at any time, and it's okay, right? But with food, we also have this understanding that, you know, you can't just have sweets all the time. That's not healthy for you, you know, like, and that the better quality the ingredients you use, the more nourishing it is and so forth, right? I like to take the approach to sex, right? If you're just going to have, like, you know, out there bad sex all the time, I don't even like to use the word bad, but, you know, like, you need to sort of have balanced sex. You know, sometimes it's going to be sweet and loving, and other times it'll be long and sensual, and other times it'll be, hey, let's get out, you know, the bondage rope and have a wild king session. You know, depending on what you feel like and what you're into and what your taste is. And that's different for everybody.
I love that. And I think the piece with food, like, we don't judge people who like sushi versus want to eat granola or whatever, you know, and it's, but there's so much permission that has to go on for us to be able to go from bondage to sweet lovemaking to something more spiritual. I mean, and this piece of how do we give each other and ourselves permission to explore that whole range is, there's so much work that has to go in to be able to get to that point. And I think that's probably a lot of what you devote your work to. I know it's part of what we devote our lives to.
What you do. Yeah. It's what you do. You know, and so much of what I do is what's underneath it all, like really getting people to understand what our worldview is around sex and sexuality. You know, I mean, I go to you know, scientific conferences around sex, and they're all mired in this false view that's still very, you know, it's still mired in that patriarchal approach, and that's very male-centered, and that somehow that limited old-fashioned view of male sexuality is the norm, right? And that anyone who deviates from that is somehow dysfunctional. And it's just, you can't even get through to these people that there's different ways of looking at it. You know, I was at a conference last year where one of the top speakers was talking about how female sexuality, quote, is like a clapped out old cart, whereas male sexuality is like a brand new Mercedes Benz. I'm just like, how can you say that? How can you say that? She comes up to me and goes, I said, that's not scientific. She goes, oh, Jacqueline, yours is soft science. Yours is soft science. She is. Oh. And I'm like, what? Yours is wrong science. Yours isn't even science. And the thing is, you know, a lot of people criticize me for not being scientific enough in my field. And, you know, I've stopped worrying about that because a lot of what I do and explore has not been addressed by the scientists, right? We're debating for heaven's sake. We don't even know how female genitals work. You know, like science has finally said, oh yeah, okay, maybe there is such a thing as, you know, female ejaculation. But we've no idea where it comes from or how it gets out, you know, or the different, like, there's nothing even about all the different types of female lubrication and just, I mean, anyone who's done any deep study into female sexuality will understand that there's lots of different substances that get, you know, that come from the female genitalia depending on the type of sex and the type of arousal and different levels of like creaminess and ooziness and wetness and all these wet things, which is probably why science hasn't studied them, because women and wet stuff down there is all a bit icky, really, isn't it? Yes. And in fact, even when they discover something new like female ejaculation, we've got to give it a male term, don't we? We've got to call it ejaculate. Yeah, I'm like, what is that? You look into the old tantric stuff and our stuff. They knew about this. And they used to give them beautiful names. Not, you know, we call our bits things like vulva. Like, you know.
It drives me insane that we don't even have one word for the entire female sexual system. There is not one word.
There's genitals. But that's not very sexy.
It's not that sexy. Right, and men have those too. You know, there's not like one.
So it's not even a separation.
It's the vulva, the vulva. I think it's clear that science is certainly like influenced by culture. You know, so they will catch up at some point, but
they are catching up. Yeah. But we're ahead of that. And, you know, like I said, you know, I don't talk about anything that I haven't experienced myself or had, you know, some firsthand experience of. And, you know, if we're really going out there and talking about, for instance, women, we can bring ourselves to orgasm. We can meditate ourselves to orgasm. There are ways of doing that. I train myself to do that. You know, that's kind of like high-level tantra. It's not something that just anyone can do. You've got to spend, you know, countless hours learning to meditate and to let go and that sort of thing. But the fact is, it's possible. Yeah. And if you want to be very good at sex and reach the peaks of sexual potential, it's like any art. I consider sex is an art, and you have to dedicate yourself to it. You know, I'm a complete sex geek. It's all about sex, which is pretty funny, really. But it's, you know, you got to keep yourself fit. You got to keep yourself healthy. You've got to, you know, study and practice and, you know, reflect on progress and, you know, do more research. It's a lot of research got to be done, you know.
So how should we be thinking about sexuality? I love how you name the sort of masturbatory, that system.
So male adolescent masturbatory approach to sex.
I think that's very explanatory. So how do you think we can think about sexuality and sex in a more useful way? Like, what do you think how do we need to be framing it? Because I think partly the story we tell ourselves about the sex that's possible influences what actually becomes possible.
Well, indeed. I think one of the key things is to see sex as normal. Like, it's a normal part of life. And we should be talking about sex and experiencing sex as though it's a normal part of life. I had some clients who'd been working with me for a year or so who had been in a really bad place in their marriage sexually, and of course therefore in the rest of their relationship. And they called me up there for their last session. They said to me, you know, we're done. We're fit. And I said, oh, how do you know that? And they said, well, we were out at dinner the other night and we found ourselves talking about sex as though it was a normal part of life. Yeah. And I think that was it. To use another example, I was at a birthday party recently and I got talking to a woman there. She would have been in her early 40s and she was bemoaning that she never really been able to successfully keep a relationship going. Anyway, so we were talking and stuff and, you know, I was talking about her and my relationship and so forth. And after a while she goes, you and your partner, do you talk about sex? I'm like, yes, we do. She goes, and do you plan things? You know, do you like talk about what you might do and like set aside time and stuff? I'm like, we'll do that. She goes, wow. She goes, it's like for you, sex is a hobby, isn't it? I'm like, yeah, I suppose you could say that sex is our hobby. It is our hobby. And she goes, wow, no wonder I've never had any luck with sex and relationships. She goes, because I always thought sex was like this secret thing that you weren't supposed to talk about and somehow you're just supposed to know what to do and it all had to be mysterious. And I'm like, yeah, well, that would explain why it hasn't been very good, really, because humans are not mind readers. She goes, wow. You know, and it's sort of, that's a lot of what people need to do in their minds, what that woman was doing who I was talking to. You know, they need to go, oh, wow, maybe there is a different way of looking at it. Yeah?
That's so... Sorry.
No, keep...
That's just so beautifully simple that, like, the way to begin having better sex is really to just be able to communicate about it and have it be an integrated part of life that we just need to share about. And of course that takes a lot of work to like get all the the emotional stuff out and the cultural stuff out of the way, but that seems like such a clear first step.
Yes, it is. And you know, after you've made love with your partner, have a bit of a chat about it. Yeah, and that's when I say to couples, you know, who are trying to open up to the concept of like talking about their sex life, and you'd be amazed at how many people do not talk about their sex life. I've had couples come to see me who've been married for, you know, 20 years or more, and they say this is the first time we've actually spoken about our sex life. They've been doing it for 20 or more years, and they have never talked about it. Yeah. It's kind of like, I sometimes think, you know, like if we put this with food in our society, basically we just said young people, there's a kitchen, there's a whole bunch of ingredients. We're not going to tell you anything. We're not going to tell you how to cook. We're not going to tell you what ingredients are. We're not going to tell you how to prepare. We're not even going to tell you how to turn the oven on. All right? Go and make fabulous food. I mean, you know, with food, it's easy. I eat peanut butter. I loathe peanut butter. I won't even have peanut butter in the house. Right? It's just the most disgusting substance on the planet, right? Does that make me a peanut butter prude? Because, you know, like, everyone else has peanut butter, right? You know, no one goes, ooh, you're a prude because you don't like peanut butter. I'm like, I just don't like peanut butter. Like, what's the deal? And then, you know, use your sushi. I love sushi. I particularly love sea urchin, raw sea urchin sushi. That's just looking yellow globular stuff. And everyone goes, ooh, how can you eat that? Raw sea urchin, you know, but do they call me a perverted freak? Maybe they do. I don't know. But the point is, no one goes, oh, you're disgusted. You know, you know, need to go and get psychoanalysis because you like eating raw sea urchin and no one else likes, you know, only a very small number of people like raw sea urchin. You're really freaky. You know, no, of course I don't do that. You know, if I said that I liked, you know, being tied up and flogged or, you know, anal fisting or whatever, you know, like, whoa, you know, freakoid, ooh. I wrote one of my recent blogs, because I have a blog as well with, you know, I don't know, hundreds of articles on my blog. Go to my website, have a look. It was about fetishes are fine, you know. And I was kind of saying, you know, we're so judgmental. Like, if a woman likes dressing up in lacy underwear, that's okay. If a man likes dressing up in lacy underwear, no, because women are allowed to wear underwear, men are not. You know, if a woman likes going out wearing a tight silk dress, that's fine. If she likes going out wearing a tight latex dress, oh no, she's a perverted freak, because it's okay to wear silk, but it's not okay to wear latex. You know, if a man finds women's breasts attractive, oh, that's perfectly normal and fine. If you find women's feet attractive, no, he's a pervert, he's a foot fetishist, you know, because it's okay to admire women's breasts and find them a turn on, but it's not okay to admire women's feet and find them a turn on. Yeah, stupid.
There's so much judgment, right? I think that's incredibly important what you're saying, just the having a more open-minded acceptance around the breadth of activities that we choose to partake in and desire and fantasize about solo or with others. And part of that is not judging ourselves and also not judging each other as much, I think. Yeah. And that's like how we create culture together.
Absolutely. And to stress the other end, it's also perfectly fine to have very simple sex. In fact, quite likely you're going to have more simple sex than anything else, you know. And have to get my couples to learn to enjoy what I call boring sex, you know, because they're kind of like, oh, it's got to be all so out there that often they don't get around to doing anything at all. You'd be surprised how many couples like aren't having very much sex because they think it's got to be bells and whistles. Yeah? I'm like, no, just have a nice, gentle little snuggle under the covers. You know, it doesn't have to be bells and whistles. You don't have to have an orgasm. You know, you can just nuzzle, you can just put his penis inside you and just have a nice little cuddle and it's fall asleep. It's okay too. It's all okay.
And so what, so you were saying earlier that you felt like women are seen as sort of having so many problems and, you know, there is this cultural conversation about low libido for women. Like, what's more helpful to think about women's sexuality? How do we want to think about women's sexuality?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. On the whole, I think women aren't dysfunctional. Women are just bored, right? Yeah. Women's sexuality is more complex than men's, right? And so women bored easily, get turned off very easily, and women need quite a lot of interesting things to be happening for them to want to be in the mood, right? Not because we're dysfunctional, but because we're actually highly functional. You could even think that we're more functional than men, because if we look at the response side of sex, women are clearly superior to men in that area, right? Women can stay aroused for very, very long periods of time. Women can have multiple orgasms. Women get into orgasmic states and so forth, right? Much more so than a man. Now, if we think of male sexuality as being like fire, right, we can think of female sexuality as like water. And a lot of people find this analogy quite useful. Okay, let me explain. So for men, often their desire, or their arousal at least, is like an on-off switch, okay? If they get in the mood for sex for some reason, it's like flicking on the switch, fire brightly, it burns strongly, and then it'll go, right? And that's because male sexuality is very testosterone-driven, right? So once they're in the mood, and I have to say that half the guys who come to see me have got lower levels of desire than their partner, so it's not like the men are actually aiming for it all the time. There's lots of reasons that stop the male fire energy from switching on. But once we've worked on that, once we've overcome that, bang, it doesn't take that long to actually become physically aroused because they get the testosterone rush. Bing. All right? Up it comes. Now, but for women, we don't have that testosterone. Right? There's, women have comparatively a lot less, and it doesn't really matter whether she's got a little bit more than other women. That doesn't make much difference. But if you think about woman's arousal, we have these very complex physiological processes that are going on. All right, and they take, it's like a cascade, and you've got to work up to it, right? And there is no sudden rush of lust. So what a woman needs to do is to get herself simmering, say, right? Because once a woman boils, if we're thinking of it as water energy, once she's boiling, she'll stay hot. She can boil and boil and boil and boil, right? So I believe that women have high sex drive. No, libido. I actually don't like the word libido. It sounds like a thing. You know, all these women are going, "What's my libido?" I'm sure I put it down here somewhere. Have you seen my libido over there? Yeah, I mean, it's just a thing, right? But libido is not a thing, right? So if you think of it more that you have water energy, then you need to heat it up. And one of the reasons why so many women are having really, really bad sexual experiences and thinking they don't like sex or that they're sexually dysfunctional is because they're not getting themselves warm enough. Right, they're trying to have sex before they're ready. If a woman has sex before she's ready, it's not going to be very good, right? And a lot of women have bought into this stupid, you know, adolescent male masturbatory model where they think that they should be bang ready like that, or that I think they should be ready like that. And women are just aren't ready like that. You're going to have bad sex.
Yeah, like accept it. So the trick to being having a higher desire is to keep your water simmering, so to speak. Okay. So what that means is that as an individual woman or as a partner of a woman, you need to be doing things that keep her feeling like, yeah, okay. Not, let's go fucking big. Because for most women, they're not going to be feeling like that very often in their life. Yeah, it's much more likely it's going to be more like, okay, well, sure, let's see where we go with this, right? And that's one of the problems with this idea that we're supposed to have this, like, libido, you know, like we're supposed to be, like, gagging for it. We're supposed to be ready for it all the time, particularly in a long-term relationship. You're not going to be feeling like that most of the time. And, in fact, the guys aren't necessarily going to be feeling like it either, right? You know, so guys don't have this incredibly insatiable libido like the mass media points out. And it's really sad because I see so many couples where he's got the lower desire because she's doing things that make herself good. Yeah, she's keeping herself happy. She's not too tired. She's getting on well. She's got an interesting life. Yeah? Those are the sorts of things that make a woman feel, yeah, sure, sex, great, right. And if he's not doing that, those sorts of things, if he's tired or stressed or, you know, going on or whatever, then he's not going to be wanting to do it either. Yeah. So really, you know, whether you think of the male sexuality as the on-off switch or women's as the, you know, the slow boil, you've both got to be doing things that work for you. Mm.
Love that. Because, yeah, we talk all the time about creating a culture of pleasure so that mm-hmm. you keep the relationship warm so it's easier to get hot. And I think it's a really similar...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is. If we look at the evolution of human sexuality, right, this is my take on it, okay? So the thing is, because our babies are born so prematurely, because we've got such big brains, we've got to get the babies out of, you know, the uterus before the mother explodes. Which means our babies are born really early and completely helpless and dependent for a very long period of time. Years. It takes years for a child to be able to be useful and able to survive, right? And also, you know, in prehistoric times, humans lived in like little tribes. And see, one of the big things about humans is our ability to cooperate. The reasons why humans have become so successful is because of our ability to cooperate. If we didn't have that ability, we would not have been as successful as we are, right? One of the things that humans are very good at cooperating on is raising children, raising our young, right? So if you're thinking of, you know, the hundreds of thousands of years that lived modern humans, okay, these little tribes would all have been putting a lot of effort into raising the children because the survival of the tribe depends on the survival of the children. And they take a lot of work, right? You know, there's a lot of attention and so forth. A single mother in prehistoric times could not have successfully raised children to adulthood or to reproductive age. You know, she can't leave them in the cave like a mother bear can. They won't cling onto her fur like baby, you know, baby monkeys, and they won't trot around after her like a baby, you know, baby horse, for instance. Yeah? They need a lot of attention. So that's why I believe, if we look at our closest relative, the chimpanzees and the bonobos as well, is that sex in humans is as much a social function, a relational function, right? A bonding function, as it is a reproductive function. Okay. And the reason why we can have sex at any time and why we love so much the pleasurable aspects of sex, and when I say sex, I don't just mean intercourse, I mean everything, yeah, is because when humans touch each other a lot, when they interact in these lovely, pleasurable ways, they release oxytocin. Okay. And oxytocin is a bonding hormone, and if it's vasopressin, which makes them all very chivalrous and after women, and you know, all those yummy connecting kind of hormones get released when we have a lot of pleasure. And it's that low level constant pleasure that you were talking about is what allows that to keep going. And I believe that over these hundreds and hundreds, you know, millions of years, that thousands of years that humans were evolving in, we were spending an awful lot of time touching each other and, you know, interacting in these really, you know, pleasurable, sensual, sexual ways. Sometimes that would also involve intercourse, which would, of course, you know, lead to babies as well, which is an important part of sex. But I actually believe in humans it is not the most important part of sex. I actually think that connecting, bonding, oxytocin-generating parts of sex and relating is what humans are sexual. In fact, it's going to be the topic of this week's radio show.
Brilliant. Yes, loving your radio show.
Voice America, Voice America's Empowerment Channel. You can listen to the Tantric Lounge. That's my radio show.
Love it. I know. I've listened to some. It's fabulous. And you can find that on Jacqueline's website.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
It's embedded.
Yeah. And that's why I feel like massage is so important for us. That's what we teach, you know, it's all that sort of making sure you get the oxytocin and, essential.
Yeah.
And so what are other things that you think parents can be doing to make sure that they keep a sex life alive?
Because read my book.
Yes,
read
exactly.
My book, Sex Life Survival.
Exactly.
Yes. That's actually how I got into specializing in sex. I actually wrote that book some years ago. When I had my third child was a baby and having pretty good sex. You're only going to find having sex difficult as parents if you buy into all those ridiculous myths that we have around sex, you know, that it's kind of got to be sort of like kind of a bit dirty and so forth, because, you know, you're not feeling dirty. You're feeling like, oh, babies, and also extremely tired. You know, the last thing you want to do is to get out the crotchless knickers and, you know, look like a porn star. You just don't, right? Or if you think that sex has got to be this long, long, you know, thing that goes on, and you've got to have orgasms and stuff, because quite off and you're too tired. Yeah. So I always say to new parents that this is a time in your relationship where you focus on the gentler, softer, simpler approaches to lovemaking. Yeah. You know, you put away the crotchless knickers and, you know, the dildos and so, you know, you'll probably bring them out in some years to come. And it might seem like a really long time. You know, a lot of people sort of, you know, you're only 28 and you think, 10 years before I can have decent sex again. I'm like, well, not necessarily. You know, it's going to be tough for a few years. Okay. And you need to sort of really focus on those bonding elements and make sure that the two of you are bonding and having nice connecting times, you know, with your children and on your own. And also make sure that you've got time for yourself as an individual, because I really believe that women need, more so than men, need alone time. Yeah, they need recharge time, particularly very, you know, modern women who are so ridiculously busy. More so than men. I don't think they need that nearly as much as women do, in my experience. So you've got to find that time for yourself. You've got to find time for yourself as a couple. And you multitask. You know, you can bring the kids down to the playground and sit on the seat watching play and hold hands and have a nice chat. You know, like, you don't have to, you know, pushing the pram along, you know, go for a nice walk together and enjoy. I remember when my kids were little, you know, I used to love, especially in the evenings, while everyone else was, you know, inside watching television and going, we'd be going for a nice walk in the beautiful evening, and the baby would fall asleep while we were out walking, so you didn't have to worry about putting it down to sleep. And coming to the sex side of things, like, also to bring your children up too, to know that mummy and daddy need cuddle time, right? Put our kids up to know that mummy and daddy have cuddle time, and they know that cuddles are great. They like cuddles. And the idea of mummy and daddy having cuddles, and when mummy and daddy have cuddles, they make love and they make love for the whole family. Yeah, that makes sense. So we'll leave them alone on a Sunday morning because we watch lots of videos. And, you know, they're fine with that. You know, and you teach them to knock on the door. You know, like, hey, mum, your dad, you know. And it's just, like, not a big deal. Like, it's just not a big deal. So you can interrupt it by the kids. So what? You know, it's like being interrupted with the kids if you're cooking. You don't go, I'm never cooking again. I'm not going to cook for another 10 years. You go, yeah, what is it? What do you want? Yeah, deal with it. And you get back to cooking. It's like, you make such a big deal about all this stuff.
And so how did you find yourself being in the mood? Because, again, I think this is this piece that a lot of people, women, say they're not, they can't think of it. They're too tired. Like, and you earlier you talked about with women with, you know, that it was about having a good, happy life in general, and that's part of what had you be interested, or has women feel interested in sex. So is that the same situation post babies again?
Absolutely. You know, like, you can set yourself up in ways so that even though you've got little babies, children and stuff, you're not absolutely exhausted, right? Or if you are, well, then it's your partner's responsibility to do nice things to you, right? Yeah, like, you know, I think lovemaking when you're a new mom should be very much about him doing nice things to you, right? You're exhausted and you're looking after the baby and he loves you for that and he thinks you're gorgeous and he's just seeing more of the goddess in you than he ever saw before because, wow, you created this amazing, you know, men are beautiful creatures like that. And that's another thing that we need to realize, right? Because we've got it in, so many women got into their heads that men, you know, just want, rah, ha, ha, get their ending, get their dick wet. And it's not. Men love women. Men love being with women, and particularly their women. I actually think men are more monogamous than women are. That's probably the topic of a whole other chat. But I actually believe that's true for a lot of reasons. And so when a woman allows a man to serve her in a way, right, I don't mean that in a derogatory way, you know, and to do lovely things, bring her cups of tea, you know, make beautiful love to her without any obligation for her to have an orgasm or something. Because when you're a tired new mum, you might not want an orgasm. You might just want nice cuddle. If you can learn to make love in a way that isn't intense, right, because that's part of the problem. We've got this idea that intercourse is supposed to be intense, and it doesn't have to be intense at all. It can be really slow and quite ecstatic. Because when you start getting into this side of lovemaking, I call it the valleys as opposed to the peaks of sex, right? It's kind of slow and exquisite, and you get completely different kinds of physical responses to it. Instead of it being localized, intense sexual excitation, it becomes a whole body sort of ecstatic sensation, you know. When you have sex like that, it recharges you, right? And but unfortunately, the kind of sex that we think of as normal, you know, this mama model, you know, the male adolescent model, is actually draining on people, and it's draining on women. It ages them. And, oh, I think we're running out of time to go into all science, you know, to understand the biology of that. So if we start having sex that's more loving, right, more connected. And when I say loving, you can have loving kink. It's not what you do, it's how you do it, all right? In fact, some of the most beautiful, loving, connected, energetic encounters I've ever seen were in high, you know, intense BDSM sessions, right? So, you know, and certainly you can have, you know, plain vanilla sex that's so disconnected, unloving, you know. So it's not what you're doing, it's how you're doing it. And what you're doing is you're just releasing this energy within yourself, or, you know, flooding your body with the happy hormones, which keep you feeling positive, keep you feeling happy, keep you looking young and vital, right? I'm kind of a bit older than I look, so I'm told. Yes, my eldest is just finishing school. Oh, my God, I can't believe it. Yeah, it does. Yeah, and it's revitalizing. And that's some of the secrets that the tantrics and the Taoists and all of them knew. They knew that sex, the sexual energy is essentially our life energy. And if we deny the sexual energy, we are denying our life energy, right? And so many, and that's why so many people, particularly once they start having kids, right, that's when they start denying their sexuality and they age. And they age in their mind, they age in their body. And so then they start going, oh, well, it must be true that, you know, once you've had kids or when you get older, sex drops off, you don't feel so good. And it's absolutely the opposite to what we should be doing, right? And I actually believe it's the opposite to what our biology wants us to do, because our biology wants us to stay young and healthy, right? That's what our genes want to do, because then we can help, you know, genetically we can help raise our genes, you know, their genes and things like that. Right, or if we want to talk about it spiritually, you know, if you want to look at us as spiritual creatures having a physical experience, right? It's all about, you know, really getting into life and experiencing life and recharging ourselves with good, healthy, wholesome living, you know, whether that's food or experiences, music, all these wonderful things that we can experience as humans. And one of those is sex.
I could not agree more.
Bravo.
Right. Voila. Yeah. Oh. I know there's so much more to talk about.
Oh, maybe we do this again. I'm coming last time. I like talking about sex as much as doing it, I think.
Right. Well, thank you for everything you do in the world. As I said, I've really enjoyed reading your work and listening. I'm so excited about your new podcast, so everyone should go check that out, and you can find all the information at jacquelinehillier.com.
The
blog, the books,
yes, and lots of books more coming out. In fact, I've just finished my next book. I'm looking for a publisher at the moment, if there's any publishers listening, which is about female sexuality and the seven sex goddesses, sexual re-liberation for today's woman. It's fantastic. It's actually educational erotica.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you for the work you're doing in the world. It's so valuable. And yes.
You too.
Thank you. Okay. To more pleasure in the world. Wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope that was a useful interview for you. Remember, you can check her out at jacquelinehillier.com, and you can check us out at pleasuremechanics.com. And remember, you can always submit a question to be answered in future podcasts at pleasuremechanics.com or by calling 302 in touch and leaving a message. You can also subscribe to our free weekly newsletter for weekly sex advice, exclusive giveaways, and more at pleasuremechanics.com. I'm Charlotte from pleasuremechanics.com, wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.